on a reasonably warm Wednesday evening here in Tamaki Makaurau. For the whānau, we are situated in Calthrop Close, Mangere, in the Mangere electorate. One of the neighbouring electorates is Mangakiakia. The newly elected Member of Parliament some 4 months ago is Greg Fleming, and from the National Party, and he's our guest this evening. Tēnā koe, Greg.
Tēnā koe, Shane. Kōrero.
Kia ora, kia ora. Hey, Greg, first of all, thank you very much for coming on the show, and particularly this late in the evening. Hey, Greg, you were elected some 4 years, only 4 months ago, but you've got quite a deep-rooted background in terms of non-for-profits, community organisations. Tell us a bit about your work, whakapapa, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I grew up in the Wairarapa, trained as a chartered accountant in Wellington, and then worked in London. And when I came back, I initially started back in the business world, but decided I'd give 1 year to work for a charity called Parenting Place in Tāmaki, just in Green Lane. And that 1 year ruined me. I got the taste of what it's like to each day have the opportunity to, you know, help people overcome challenges and explore opportunities. And so I ended up staying in that sector. So I've worked for about a dozen different charities, a number of them that I've started with various friends, and they've been in education and youth development and prisoner rehabilitation and just about anything. I just love the ability of communities to change lives.
And you've started several non-for-profits at a very grassroots sort of community based role. Why take that route rather than perhaps work for a corporate organisation? Why take that particular route, Greg?
Well, as I say, I sometimes when I go to try and make my mortgage payment, I do ask myself that question. I really didn't plan to go into the community sector. It really was just going to be a 12-month stint to help this, what was quite a young organisation at that stage, Parenting Place, get going. But that experience of being able to allocate resources, make introductions and advocate for families and individuals to actually bring about real change in their life and overcome the challenges they're facing. It, honestly, it's like a drug. Yeah. Like it's so fulfilling. And in fact, it's one of the, and this is, I just never left the sector. I just, I've worked there for 25, 26 years. I've run charities. I've consulted for charities. I've raised a lot of money for charities, and the only reason why I in the end decided to pull the trigger and go into Parliament was because I saw an opportunity to serve the community that we had lived in for 26 years. So we'd lived in Mangakiakia for all that time, and our five kids have been born and raised there, and I could see, you know, the possibility, and I'm working that out now. Let's chat again in a couple of years' time and tell you whether it's actually working. But I saw the possibility of being able to help serve families, schools and community institutions in Mangakiakia by advocating for them in Parliament. So that's, that was, koe rā te tūmanako.
Kia ora.
As I say,
So, Greg, for those people that don't live in Mangakiakia, they, you know, this is, this show goes right throughout Aotearoa. Tell us a bit about the sort of geographical spread of Mangakiakia and a little bit about the demographics. Then I want to talk to you about some of your hopes and aspirations. But let's just give us an understanding of the electorate.
Awesome. Yes, it goes from Mount Wellington across to, through Onehunga. So it includes Penrose, Ellerslie, sweeps around around Mangakiakia itself, so through the suburbs of One Tree Hill, Green Lane, picks up Royal Oak, it's got Oranga, which is just on the south side of One Tree Hill, and then it finishes off when it starts to touch Hillsborough. So, yeah, some people say, oh, that's a big electorate, but, I mean, the truth is that I can drive, if traffic's not too bad, I can drive from one side of my electorate to the other in less than 20 minutes. A number of my colleagues, it takes them 5 hours.
That's right. Your colleague from Northland would say that's tiny, eh? And it's quite a... It's quite a good demographic spread in terms of the different ethnicities.
Yeah, oh, massive. Eh? There was a moment during the campaign when I'd spent the morning down outside the shops there, and where Waitangi Road just comes off Mount Smart Road.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and opposite the Kāinga Ora development there, and meeting people, and you can imagine some of the stories that life stories that have been shared with me. I mean, these are people for whom I'm all about advocating for. I mean, life couldn't get much more tough, right? And you go from that, and jump in my car, and 7 minutes later, I found myself driving down Maunga Kiakia Ave, which runs along the eastern side of Nate, and you couldn't buy a house in there for under $6 million. No. And so that's all in that electorate. So now it's a real mix. Yeah.
And also quite a number of recent immigrants.
Oh, massive. Yeah. Over 40% of people in Maunga Kiakia were born outside of Aotearoa. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Hey, in the studio, I've got Jamie Daly, my cohort, my co-host here, and he's got a few questions for you, Greg.
Yeah, kia ora, Jamie.
Kia ora, Greg. I just wanted to pick up on some of your comments in your maiden speech where you expressed the joy in terms of connecting people in need with resources and solutions. Just the question, on reflection, what specific roles, Greg, brought you the most joy for our listeners out there?
Oh, you're probably the ones I mentioned in the maiden speech, really. I absolutely loved my work at Parenting Place. That was just extraordinary. We had particularly a program there called Building Awesome Whānau. That was just next level. But probably the most fulfilling one I find myself sort of often reflecting on, was I had the privilege of being the founding chair of a trust based in Manurewa called Te Whaka Ora Tangata. And it was essentially a charity that we built around an incredible couple who organically for several years had been helping whānau in that community, and the most challenged, the ones that were really facing that intergenerational brokenness. And so we built a charity around them so as to sustain and then scale their work, and they've taken it up to Kaitaia as well. And so during that, during my 10 years there, I had the privilege of seeing probably close to 1,000 whānau navigate incredibly complex roads, and as I say, actually in some cases break like 5 generations of trauma. Yeah. So pretty hard to beat that.
Yeah, I was quite struck by your speech, Greg, in terms of your work in terms of Te Ao Māori. And can you just give us a bit of commentary around young Toby is obviously involved in full immersion with your son? Can we just talk about that? I'm really interested.
Holy heck. When I gave the maiden speech, we were still a couple of months away from starting the college, but we had the opening pōwhiri in mid-February, and then he started we finished that, we had the kai, and then he was straight into it. And then about 2 weeks ago, so this is maybe in his fourth week, I came home from a week in Parliament, and I said to him, pia here to wiki e tama, and he replied to me in Te Reo Māori and spoke for like the next 2 or 3 minutes. And honestly, just, piki te ora, eh? Like, I mean, I've been asking him that for several years because he's been learning Te Reo Māori at his high school, but he just never had the confidence to actually respond to me. And it was, just amazing. And in fact, we went a few days later, I took him up to a conference up in Waitangi with me, and we chatted away for sort of half the trip in Te Reo Māori. I mean, we're both continuing to learn together, but it's awesome. And then last Sunday night we had some friends over from the UK for dinner, and they started to ask, they wanted to talk about what's happening in New Zealand in terms of bicultural relationships, and what's our hope as a family towards what in 15, 20 years time Aotearoa might look like. And he started to talk. And out of this, and his passion and his desire for wanting to play a role in all that, and I was just like, oh man, just like as a parent, you'd like, oh, this is the stuff that I dream and pray about, eh? So,
Greg,
he's loving it.
I want to have a kōrero about that, because some will say that race relations in Aotearoa New Zealand are broke. I don't share that. I don't share that, actually. No. Far from perfect. I think folks my age, I'm 57, maybe some a bit older, got sort of a hang-ups, but I don't see that when I'm talking to our kids. Just a bit of a background, Greg. I'm Tūhoe. I'm Māori, of course. Uh, my my wife is Chinese, so my kids are trilingual, and I just their te reo is pretty basic, but they're getting there. But I just think that those sort of hang-ups don't exist amongst our tamariki. I've got a lot of hope for Aotearoa New Zealand in terms of biculturalism and multiculturalism, Greg.
Oh, I share it big time as well, Jamie. Like, I mean, just two examples from yesterday, one after the other, was I was chatting with, you mentioned before, my mate who's the Northland MP. Yeah. Like, he's just joined the Waitangi Trust Board.
Yeah.
And whilst I'm still recruiting him and going, it's Waitangi grant, not Waitangi.
Yeah.
And he loves being, he's just always at me, hey, Greg, you make sure you correct me. And I'm like, well, you know, my Toby's correcting me all the time. But we were reflecting on the fact that in his maiden speech, he said one of his dreams is that in 2040, we're able to actually celebrate a nation that is well on the road to being genuinely bilingual, like thoroughly bicultural. Mm. And you know, that's a 59-year-old farmer from Mangatoroto in Northland.
Yeah.
And then I was also then walking back with one of the younger, and this will probably surprise a bunch of listeners, but walking back with one of the younger ACT MPs, and we just heard one of the more senior politicians not pronounce kupu correct during question and answer time, and he was critiquing them and saying, oh man, like, what is it? Like, why can't people actually treat the Māori language with the care that it deserves? And then he started talking about how his kids are learning te reo Māori and how much he loves it and about the mihi that they're learning and da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, I actually see it everywhere, like literally even within Parliament, which could surprise a number of people given, some of the hoo-ha that's perceived to be going on out there.
Greg, some say that the worst job in politics is the leader of opposition, but other would say that it's a backbench government MP. Sort of, what issues are you trying to deal with on a local basis? Do you have a private members bill that you might want to bring forward? Early on in terms of Greg Fleming's career, what do you want to mould?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Thanks, Jamie. Yeah, well, so, you know, there's, you know, e rua nā tūranga, and they are really quite different because you've got, I mean, yeah, the role, particularly being a backbencher in the House, your role is quite limited. That said, I have managed to get myself appointed onto the Māori Affairs Select Committee, and that's amazing. Like, today we were just finishing off the hearings on the Whakatohia Settlements Bill, and so a couple of weeks weeks ago we went to a port and seeing firsthand and hearing firsthand what that settlement's going to be able to do for that iwi, for the six hapū that make up the iwi, in terms of just unleashing their ability to take care of themselves economically.
It was a settlement a long time coming, wasn't it, Greg?
Oh, man, unbelievable.
I think the first offer was made some 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was 1996. And honestly, you've got Uncle Duda, Te Kahutu, Maxwell, and just some, some absolutely some tanifa down there.
Yeah.
And so that's been amazing to be part of that. Mm. And then if I turn my attention to my role in Mangatiakia, like there, I can on a daily basis actually make difference in people's lives. So we just literally every day now we're able to get people, whānau who've been waiting for like 2 or 3 years for a house. We can work with them through kāinga ora. Getting them into their houses. We're able to help kids get into their local schools when they've been hitting zoning issues. We're helping people with immigration. And so often, nearly always, the people that we're advocating for are those who just struggle with the system, right?
Yeah.
Like people like me. We've got the intergenerational and cultural heritage to be able to navigate the systems, because that's whereas there's just so many people for whom the systems are just overwhelming, and being able to advocate for them and bring about those changes is just it's like, all that work I did in the charitable sector, I now get to do it. My wife laughs at me. She says, like, you're doing it with a cape on, because now that I've got these two little letters at the end of my name, MP, my staff joke, and they reckon it stands for making progress, because you actually, like, you ring Auckland Transport or you ring KO or anywhere, and they actually, like, there was this cool kid. He was just, it was just just this beautiful Tongan kid who was just here. I shouldn't name the details of the school, but basically the school was just not doing right by him at all. And he'd been struggling with them for like 12 months. And within 4 hours of the MP's office calling, he was back in that school and they were actually addressing it. So just being able to deploy influence like that is just fantastic. In terms of the private members bill that I'm working on, well, this goes back to my charitable sector days. I'm really keen to require a funding trust to give a bigger share of their return to charity each year. So a lot of
is it limited? Is it limited?
Well, the thing is, what happens is the majority of trusts out there that exist and get all the tax, benefits and stuff, they actually do pretty well. But I've come across, quite a few over the last 25 years who are just sitting on big, fat balance sheets and they're not paying tax on their returns, but they're giving away a tiny portion of their amount. And what I want to do is say that I'd like to pass some legislation that says if you're going to receive those tax benefits, then you actually have to give away, a decent share.
And it has to be real aid, not just move it from one trust to another, which does exist. Yep. Hey, Greg, you've talked about housing, and, Manga Kikia I live on the border of your electorate, and, you've always got the sort of the conflict in terms of needing to provide more state housing through Kāinga Ora, and, you've got character home zoning in your area. As a local MP, how do you deal with that real conflict?
Yeah, well, even on the road that I live on, Whetarangi, like we've got the neighbour. Yeah. So the neighbour over our back property, there was one for that. We've lived in that house for 15 years.
Yeah.
We built there actually back then, and for the first 13 years, our back neighbour, the neighbouring property at their back was just one single level house sitting in a nice big wooded section, and our kids would, the ball would bounce off the trampoline, they'd jump over the fence and go and get it amongst the trees. They're just finishing off the development there. There's now 27 houses where there was one. And, I would have loved for it to have stayed with one, but that's just not good stewardship, right? Yeah. But the reality of it is that we need more houses in our communities. We need lots more houses. And so I actually applaud my neighbour for taking the economic gamble and putting 27 homes in there.
The reality is in a city like Tamaki Makaurau, we just can't continue to build out wide because that means that, heavy on infrastructure, public transport, etc. We're going to have some mid-density housing and some of the facilities that we might have, like rather than a quarter acre backyard, just some shared green space and greater and better access to those shared spaces.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, it's got to be done. Like the reality of it is that we've got a growing population, and we don't have enough houses already. We need to be building tens of thousands of more homes, and as you've said, what we don't want to be doing them is just endlessly extending our cities. Yes. We need to thicken them up. Yep.
Greg, you've just got a background in accountancy and finance and marketing. Obviously, we're in constrained economic conditions at the moment, and things don't look to be getting any better anytime soon. What's your sort of view on the long-term economic outlook, Greg, in terms of where we are with interest rates, cost of living? Are you of the view that things will sort of progressively get better as the year rolls on, or do you think we're sort of quite a far way down the line in terms of any sort of improvement at this stage?
I was a little bit more optimistic until about 2 weeks ago when the revised Treasury forecast came out, and it looks like we are going to be in for a tough year, eh? Like it's certainly, I think I've got good hope from sort of first to second quarter next year, but unfortunately I think the next 9 to 12 months are going to get pretty tight. They're obviously already hard. That said, it is encouraging to see inflation starting to fall and seeing food prices come off.
Core inflation is going to be a bit sticky though, eh, Greg? Core inflation is going to be a bit sticky.
You got it. Yeah, that is. And we're not going to get rid of that in a hurry. So, but I'm confident that we're now doing the things. I mean, obviously, I'm going to say this because I'm part of this government. But I genuinely do believe that the decisions that have been made recently and we continue to make will drive the cost of living down. We will see inflation come back down. Yep, notwithstanding your point around core inflation, and then with the key thing is going to be getting those interest rates down, right? I mean, that's where the biggest pain is coming from. Like when I'm around the electorate, that is hands down that cost of living, but and fundamentally the cost of those interest rates driving that cost of living, that's the biggest pain that people are feeling. And so I just love the fact that as a government now we're laser focused on getting those rates down. I mean, my mortgage payments have literally tripled in the last 2 years.